You are going to listen to a report about the training of ball boys for the famous Wimbledon tennis tournament. First, you will have 45 seconds to study the task below. Then you will hear the recording twice. While listening, match the beginnings of the sentences, 1 to 8, with the sentence endings, A to K. There are two sentence endings that you should not use. Write your answers in the boxes provided on the answer sheet. The first one, 0, has been done for you. After the second listening, you will have 45 seconds to check your answers.
Two kids of about 15 were standing in symmetrical formation, stock still. When a stray ball came their way, they scooped it up, threw it with speed and perfect accuracy into the player's hand, and then returned to being statues once more. As someone who has spent a decade trying and failing to get teenagers to pick up stray dirty socks from the floor and throw them in the general direction of the laundry basket, I found this performance even more remarkable than the one being given by the grown-up men with the tennis rackets. It turns out that there's a formula for drilling these Wimbledon ball boys that has been in operation for decades. It's the last training course on earth that makes no concessions whatsoever to modern management methods. It also produces better results than any I've ever seen. 4 months before the tournament begins, 700 teenage hopefuls begin to learn how to stand still, throw, march, look people in the eye, and tuck their shirts into their shorts. Each has a number pinned to them. There's no truck with anything so namby-pamby as calling people by their names. They're expected to memorise rules and understand that following them isn't optional. Only a third of the hopefuls get selected. Absenteeism, even through illness, is not tolerated. In return for their time, effort and devotion, ball boys get paid nothing at all. They don't even get thanked. When they threw the ball back to Karlovic, he didn't turn round and say, "Great job," to help boost their self-esteem. He ignored them. Ball boys understand it's their job to be invisible and merge into the background. They aren't even allowed to enjoy the tennis. On paper, it all sounds most unattractive. Yet half the children in years 9 and 10 in southwest London schools would gladly saw off their right arms for the chance. Were it not for the fact that minus a limb, they'd be less useful on court. You might think that what makes a normal, Facebook-addicted teenager so desperate to become a ball boy is no mystery. It's proximity to sporting royalty, as well as to actual royalty. It's also the chance to be on television. Though as they all look identical in their navy uniforms, even the proudest parent might struggle to identify their offspring. But I suspect there's something more important going on, too. It's about being part of something wonderful. It's understanding that a valuable institution rests on the perfect behaviour of everyone who works there. The draconian training is not a drawback, it's a selling point. The stricter the rules, the more seriously the institution takes itself, and therefore the greater the glory in being part of it. Yet this sort of training, based on pride and obedience and anonymity, is not merely out of fashion in the corporate world, it's vanished without trace. Only last week I received a survey showing how even punctuality is no longer seen as a thing of value. 3/4 of bosses apparently don't care if their employees are half an hour late for work in the morning. Such flexibility is brilliant news for workers everywhere, said Mosey, the company that did the survey. But is flexibility really so good? And what about its sister trend, individuality? Two kids of about 15 were standing in symmetrical formation, stock still. When a stray ball came their way, they scooped it up, threw it with speed and perfect accuracy into the player's hand, and then returned to being statues once more. As someone who has spent a decade trying and failing to get teenagers to pick up stray dirty socks from the floor and throw them in the general direction of the laundry basket, I found this performance even more remarkable than the one being given by the grown-up men with the tennis rackets. It turns out that there's a formula for drilling these Wimbledon ball boys that has been in operation for decades. It's the last training course on earth that makes no concessions whatsoever to modern management methods. It also produces better results than any I've ever seen. 4 months before the tournament begins, 700 teenage hopefuls begin to learn how to stand still, throw, march, look people in the eye, and tuck their shirts into their shorts. Each has a number pinned to them. There's no truck with anything so namby-pamby as calling people by their names. They're expected to memorise rules and understand that following them isn't optional. Only a third of the hopefuls get selected. Absenteeism, even through illness, is not tolerated. In return for their time, effort and devotion, ball boys get paid nothing at all. They don't even get thanked. When they threw the ball back to Karlovic, he didn't turn round and say, "Great job," to help boost their self-esteem. He ignored them. Ball boys understand it's their job to be invisible and merge into the background. They aren't even allowed to enjoy the tennis. On paper, it all sounds most unattractive. Yet half the children in years 9 and 10 in southwest London schools would gladly saw off their right arms for the chance. Were it not for the fact that minus a limb, they'd be less useful on court. You might think that what makes a normal, Facebook-addicted teenager so desperate to become a ball boy is no mystery. It's proximity to sporting royalty, as well as to actual royalty. It's also the chance to be on television. Though as they all look identical in their navy uniforms, even the proudest parent might struggle to identify their offspring. But I suspect there's something more important going on too. It's about being part of something wonderful. It's understanding that a valuable institution rests on the perfect behaviour of everyone who works there. The draconian training is not a drawback, it's a selling point. The stricter the rules, the more seriously the institution takes itself, and therefore the greater the glory in being part of it. Yet this sort of training, based on pride and obedience and anonymity, is not merely out of fashion in the corporate world, it's vanished without trace. Only last week I received a survey showing how even punctuality is no longer seen as a thing of value. 3/4 of bosses apparently don't care if their employees are half an hour late for work in the morning. Such flexibility is brilliant news for workers everywhere, said Mosey, the company that did the survey. But is flexibility really so good? And what about its sister trend, individuality?